Welcome back to the Dirt Show. Always miss you for the several days that we're not doing the Dirt Show. You can always see me on Locals, which I do every single day. A few years ago, I was in Rockefeller Center about to go up to the NBC studios to do a television interview. And a guy comes over to me and puts his arm around me and says, "Hey, I'm a big fan." Here's the guy. I didn't know who he was at the time. Now I know who he is. His name is something like Rock something, you know. He's become very famous for being slapped in the face by Will Smith. And so I've been getting emails and calls from people all over with one simple question. Did Will Smith commit a crime? Could he be prosecuted under California law? I am, after all, the expert in that issue. And the answer is fairly clear. California law defines battery very, very broadly. Any willful and unlawful use of force upon the person of another. And a number of the cases give as examples a slap on the face, spitting at somebody. You don't have to cause harm. It doesn't have to be violent. It's just an unlawful touching. And obviously, what happened at the Oscars last night was an unlawful and unwelcome touching. And in fact, the standard instruction in California says, quote, "Words, no matter how opprobrious, do not give you justification to hit another person." So no matter what you might think of Chris Rock's stupid joke, and it was a stupid joke, I don't know whether he knew about the illness that afflicted Will Smith's wife that caused her to lose her hair. By the way, she looks absolutely gorgeous. Am I allowed to say that? Yeah. She looks absolutely gorgeous with her short cropped hair, but it's not the appropriate subject for a joke. Look, I think many of the things that were said at the Oscars last night were not appropriate subjects for jokes. Jennifer Lawrence, "Oh, you put on a little weight." No, you know, you don't talk about things like that. And I think the Oscars have had bad humor for a long, long time. And there's a lot of inside humor, you know, people making fun of each other, and including making fun of each other's wives. And Will Smith has particularly been the butt of some jokes about his open infidelity. He doesn't call it infidelity, he just says it's an open marriage, but there have been jokes told referencing both his wife and him along those lines. But this was not an appropriate joke to tell, particularly by someone who, if he knew about the illness, should have instead just left it alone. But, you know, when you watch it on television, immediately Will Smith laughs. Then he turns to his wife and sees she isn't laughing. So he then takes on the role of defender of black women. He gave an interview in which he said he's devoted his life to defending black women, and he should defend black women against violence, but not against bad jokes. There's a big difference between defending somebody against violence and defending somebody against bad humor. Look, under the law, there's absolutely no justification for what Will Smith did to Chris Rock. He smacked him in the face. Chris Rock has said he's not going to file a complaint under California law. That's not necessary. For a civil suit, you have to file a complaint. There has to be a complainant. If he wanted to sue him for tort, he would have to be the complainant. But in California, as in most other states, the state can bring charges. Usually you don't because there are no witnesses. Here there were, what, 100 million witnesses? Videotapes? You don't need Chris Rock's testimony to prosecute Will Smith. I don't think Will Smith will be prosecuted, but he could be. He has technically at least committed the crime of battery, not the crime of assault, interestingly enough, because under California law, assault requires what the law defines as violence. And, you know, you can make an argument that it was violent, but a slap on the face like that does not constitute the kind of violence that I think was contemplated by the assault statute. You know, often people put together assault and battery, but they're actually separate crimes. An assault is generally an attempted battery, threatening somebody. Assault doesn't require a physical touching. Battery requires a physical touching. Here there was a physical touching. When I first saw it, like so many people, I thought it was scripted. I thought it was part of the show. And then when, of course, the sound went off, I realized somebody was saying something that somebody didn't want us to hear, and that suggested the possibility maybe this was unscripted. Well, it was unscripted, and it was uncalled for, and it shouldn't have happened. And the Academy has now condemned it and said it will look into what further action may be required. I don't think there'll be any further action required. You know, lots of people have won lots of Oscars, and they've acted in ways that might incline somebody to take their Oscars away, but that hasn't been the methodology of the Academy of Motion Pictures. So I suspect that the Oscar will stand. Whether Will Smith will be invited to next year's Oscars, as usually the former winner of Best Actor is invited, remains to be seen. I don't know the answer to that. What I do know is this, and this is serious. Will Smith is a role model. Look, I remember Mike Tyson, my former client, saying, "I'm not a role model. I don't want young kids to be like me." But Will Smith is a role model. He holds himself out as a role model, a protector of black women. That's not the kind of message I think a winner of the Academy Award should be sending to young kids, that if you don't like what somebody says, slap them. You know, it was Sigmund Freud many years ago who said, "Civilization began on the day the first man hurled an insult instead of a sword or a spear." And civilized responses to bad jokes are to call them out. Imagine how much better it would have been if Will Smith had gotten up and said, "Chris, do you know what you're doing here? You're making a joke of somebody who suffers from an illness that many people suffer from, and that's not an appropriate basis for humor, so I would politely ask you to apologize to my wife." I'm sure Rock would have apologized, and the matter would have been over, and a very good message would have been sent from a role model to young kids out there, or even not so young kids. You know, the tragedy is that we live in an age today when speech, which is not liked by some people, is responded to by violence, whether it be violent organizations like Antifa, which threaten violence when right-wing speakers take the platform. They threaten violence against me. I'm not a right-winger, but I'm pro-Israel. And when I made a speech on a university campus, they had to call guards because Antifa threatened violence. I've been threatened many times with violence. In Toronto, the police got a message that violence, serious violence, lethal violence, was to be directed at me. And they stood on the stage with bulletproof glass shields to protect me as I spoke. You know, there's rumors today that some of people that Putin doesn't like may have recently been poisoned in Kiev. I don't know whether that's true. I do know that Putin almost certainly has poisoned people, including a friend of mine, Erwin Cutler, the former Minister of Justice of Canada, who went to try to defend one of Putin's enemies and ended up getting very sick with what he believes was radiation poisoning. He doesn't think anybody tried to kill him. He thinks that they were sending him a message that next time it could be worse because, you know, they know how to kill. Look, I think I've told you before, I was representing the president of Ukraine. This is probably 15 years ago. His name was Kuchma. And I was about to help present the argument in court on a Monday. On Sunday, the lawyers were all meeting in a hotel, and one of the lawyers didn't show up. And when they checked his room, he was dead of a heart attack. And we know that the KGB knows how to administer heart attacks that are non-traceable. And so they got me out of the country as soon as possible to avoid the same thing happening to me. And I did the rest of my legal consultation in Ukraine by Zoom. I don't think I'm going back there anytime soon, or to Russia. But that's not the way we do things in the United States. In the United States, we're supposed to respond to bad speech by good speech, by better speech. If a comedian tells a bad joke, call him out on it. Boo him. It's okay to boo. I would have been very happy if Will Smith had gotten up, boo, 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 sit down, no, no. That would have been fine. That's free speech, as long as you don't shout him down, as long as you allow him to respond. And of course, Chris Rock did respond. He just said, it was a joke. It was just about G.I. Jane. Yeah, it was a joke. It was a bad joke and a tasteless joke. But again, you don't respond to tasteless jokes with slaps in the face. And if a slap in the face is tolerated, next time it will be a punch in the face, giving new meaning to the concept of punchline. I'm sorry. Okay, I couldn't avoid that. But there was no punchline. It was only a slap line. But he wasn't hurt. It was more like being spit on, which is an assault, or being slapped. Look, in the old days, Alexander Hamilton's time, slap meant a duel to the death. That wasn't what was done there, although it was very much a verbal duel. But verbal duels are to be preferred over physical duels. And even though this only involved a slap in the face, that's permission to do more. And I think the Academy was right in responding. We'll see what else happens. There will not, the DA's office hasn't responded to comments, but I don't believe that there'll be a criminal prosecution, largely for priorities. I mean, if nobody is filing a complaint, then generally the prosecution will not move forward. By the way, if this were a man who slapped a woman in the context of a domestic dispute, under the law of California and some other states, there wouldn't even be much discretion. They would have to prosecute. And I've seen cases where a mere slap in a domestic context can result in a prosecution, usually for a misdemeanor, but being prosecuted for a misdemeanor can be pretty serious. It can entail prison time, short amount of either jail or prison time. It only results in a felony if it causes serious harm or other considerations. For example, a touching, but a sexual touching, say somebody on in a subway who touches somebody inappropriately sexually, that could be a felony and could carry with it more time in prison. This was certainly not that. This was a symbolic slap. One can argue that a symbolic slap should be considered like speech, because after all, it didn't hurt anybody. It just was, I'm so angry. I guess I don't want to make a comparison, but you can make a comparison to President Biden's symbolic slap at Putin. Joe Biden didn't have in his speech the statement that Putin shouldn't be allowed to lead his country, but he was so angry. He was so outraged by what he had seen in Ukraine and Poland. He wasn't in Ukraine, but what he had seen of Ukraine in Poland, that he went outside the script and he slapped, not physically, but verbally, slapped Putin. And that required the White House to state unequivocally, and the State Department to state unequivocally, no, it is not the policy of the United States to be seeking regime change. And today, President Biden clarified that even more in what I thought was quite a good television interview with a lot of answers to hard questions, in which he said, look, I was just outraged. I'm not backing away from what I said, but it's not a change of policy. It's just an expression of outrage by the leader of the free world, the man who has access to the nuclear button, the man who could start World War III if he chose to, but he's not going to. And I think he's right. I think President Biden is right when he said, oh, Putin doesn't need an excuse for doing, for escalating. If he wants to escalate, he'll escalate. He's not going to use this as an excuse to escalate. Because remember, the difference between Putin and Biden is Biden has polls, and he has to appeal to his base, and he has to maintain a majority, both for the midterm elections and for the presidential elections. Putin doesn't have to do that at all. He's going to win every election if there is an election. But he could still be overthrown. We know that Gorbachev essentially was overthrown, not by the people, but by the Kremlin elites when he, quote, lost the Cuban Missile Crisis. I've never thought he lost the Cuban Missile Crisis. I thought he acted sensibly to defuse a terrible situation. I think it was a win-win, not a win-loss. But that's not the way it was seen in the Kremlin. And we don't know how a non-win or a loss or a tie in Ukraine will be seen by people in power in the Kremlin. We have no idea. I don't think American intelligence has very much of an idea as who pulls the strings in the Kremlin other than Putin. Who are the people who could overrule Putin? It's not like a parliamentary system where you bring a couple of hundred people together in a room and you raise your hand, and if there's not a majority, you're out. It's not like a corporate board where you have 15 or 20 people and they can vote the CEO out. We don't know the dynamics of how Putin could be, I won't say voted out, but forced out. We don't know. And we don't know whether if he were to be forced out, it would be by nonviolent means or by violent means. Of course, Russia has a long history. When the Tsar was deposed, he wasn't just told, you're going to have to leave now. He was lined up with his entire family and shot with everybody in the family, maybe not Anastasia, we still don't know about her, but everybody else in the family was murdered in cold blood in order to avoid a succession. Russia has this tradition of violent transitions, unlike the American transition, which until 2020, 2021 was always peaceful and almost always without dispute. Now we see there is dispute. A judge today in California, a federal judge, said, wasn't an opinion, it was dictum, but he said that he thought there was evidence to suggest that President Trump and his lawyer, I don't think he named the lawyer, may have committed felonies in obstructing Congress and engaging in some kind of vague conspiracy. That doesn't seem right to me. I'd like to know what the evidence is and what the law is before I jump to any conclusion about that. But generally, we've had transitions in government. This all comes back, of course, to at a macro level. This all comes back to the micro level of the Academy Awards. You might say big deal, it's the Academy Awards, not the government. The most important product that America exports to the world today is motion pictures. Motion pictures give us the influence that we have around the world. And so the Academy Awards is watched all over the world, not in Russia anymore. I'm wondering if they were able to watch it before Ukraine. They certainly were not able to watch it last night because of fear that things could be said about Ukraine. And a couple of things were said about Ukraine. Last night was actually a little less political than some of the other nights in the past. Some of the other nights were dominated by politics. I thought it was quite cute when the three female comedians said, and to the people of Florida, we're going to have a gay night. That was obviously a takeoff on what people have called the Don't Say Gay Bill in Florida. Of course, if you read the so-called Don't Say Gay Bill, it has nothing to do with saying gay. You can say it all you want. It has to do with whether children of a certain very young age should be taught about gay, transgender, and other kinds of sexual activities or sexualities, which are appropriate for slightly older children, but, you know, may not be appropriate for younger children. So free speech, that's the key to America, nonviolence, that's the key to America. And so last night was a good night in many respects. I think that the film that won so many awards about people who were part of the deaf community was a wonderful, wonderful statement. And the people accepting the award, speaking and signing, just made me feel wonderful about America. I thought it was just terrific. Thought some of the other winning Oscars were terrific, but then it was all marred by this physical altercation. And it was not a good night for the First Amendment, for freedom of speech, for civility, for teaching young people how to respond to insults, how to respond to attacks on their dignity. You know, so many fights are caused by that. I mean, one of the films that was up for an Academy Award and didn't win any was Leonard Bernstein's masterpiece, West Side Story, directed by Spielberg. But remember what happened there. I don't want to give you the ending, spoiler alert, but insults and lack of respect and racism and all of that, you know, result in the tragic death of a decent and innocent person who was trying to make his way in the world. Obviously, the West Side Story is based on Romeo and Juliet. For those of you who don't know, you know, the original musical by Leonard Bernstein, when he was very young and right out of Harvard College, the original musical was called East Side Story. And it was based on a conflict between Jewish people on the east side of New York and Irish people on the east side of New York. But he put it in his draw, and by the time he took it out again, those conflicts were no longer in the news, and the conflicts between people of Puerto Rican background and people of Anglo background were a prominent source of conflict. And so he changed the context to the West Side instead of the East Side, and Puerto Rican versus undisclosed ethnic groups. And I think they went out of their way to make sure they were undisclosed. The guy's name is Tony, but it's Anton. There was some kind of Eastern European ethnicity hinted at, but not clear. So bad night for freedom of speech, bad night for lessons to young people, and stay tuned to see what the Academy does. They'll do something. And what the Los Angeles District Attorney does, they'll do nothing. And that may be the appropriate response. So have we gotten any calls? I'm here with my son who produces the show.
First a correction.
Yep, a correction.
Yeah, your comment that the entertainment industry is the number one export.
Yeah.
It's number two. Weapons is one.
Ah, weapons is one. Okay, so I correct myself. I think, however, I'm sticking with it. I'm not backing down. Me and Joe Biden, I'm not backing down. I think that the entertainment industry is the most influential export the United States makes around the world that enhances our image and that makes people want to be like Americans and come to America. Let's remember, with all the criticism that's made of America, people vote with their feet. And there's one country in the world more than any other that people want to come to. And they want to wear jeans. They want to wear American T-shirts. They want to watch American movies. They want to sing American songs. So I think that combination of factors is what makes America the most popular country in the world, even at the same time when it's one of the most criticized.
And the viewers were sort of arguing back and forth in different states. It was, this would be assault. In other states, it would be battery. So they wanted to have clarity on that.
Okay, look, under our constitutional system, every state has the right to define its own crimes. Traditionally, under common law, English law, which we adapted, assault is doing this to somebody and threatening to hurt them. The assault is up to the point where the fist hits the body. Then the assault turns into a battery. In many jurisdictions, the two are combined. In California, there are two sections of the code, 240 and 242. 240 is assault, 242 is battery. Section 240 requires some degree of violence. That's why assault is probably off the table. 242 does not require violence. It just requires willful and unlawful use of force. Now, just because the guy's name is Will doesn't make it willful. It has to be intentional. He has to know what he's doing, and of course the evidence is clear. He knew what he was doing. He got up. He was not in a frenzy. He walked 10 steps and he went boom, and then they start cursing each other, and the sound went off. So look at your own statutes. It's easy. You just Google Wisconsin law of assault, Wisconsin law of battery, and you'll see whether or not the criteria were met in many of those states. You know, it's interesting today with Google, you really can be a lawyer. You can look it up. Now, obviously, there's case law, there's decisions, there's instructions to the jury that refine and define, but it's the statute that counts. And the statutory law does vary state to state. And probably there's no federal law, because there's no federal crime of assault. There may be assault crimes in the District of Columbia, but federal crimes of assault wouldn't be really part of the federal code of criminal law. Any more questions from the audience? Or if not, I'll go to some of the old questions.
You're saying criminal versus civil?
Well, criminal versus civil, of course, civil, you have to have a plaintiff. And Will Smith is not going to Chris Rock is not going to sue, there's not going to be a plaintiff or a defendant. Now, criminal law doesn't need a complaining witness. That's a myth. There are some states and in some jurisdictions for some crimes, by law, you can't prosecute unless there's a complaining witness. That's not true in California. That's not true in most states. If it's on television, if there's a video of the crime, you can prosecute the crime. Obviously, the most obvious crime of murder that doesn't require a complaining witness is murder, because the complaining witness is dead. So that's the difference between civil and criminal. Civil is personal between two people or groups of people, and criminal is between the state, the government, and the individual. Any more?
Well, this one guy just says Rumble is awesome, and I think we would agree.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's interesting. I got a few letters like that. Mr. Dershowitz, when I first saw your podcast on Rumble, I thought I was going to hear nothing but leftist views. I'm pleased to say that isn't the case. I am more conservative than you and a Republican, but I admire the way the law takes precedence over your own personal opinion. Too bad more lawmakers don't act like that, instead of following party lines all the time. Yeah, no, I think there's some truth to that. Professor Dershowitz, on the topic of the Supreme Court, I'd like to ask whether you have a judicial philosophy of your own. Though not having served as a judge, you clerked for the late Justice Goldberg, and therefore there were cases that covered the legitimacy of the death penalty pursuant to the famous Eighth Amendment text, cruel and unusual punishment. Well, I have a judicial philosophy. I'm not a judge, but I argue in front of judges all the time. That's not where my judicial philosophy comes into play. When I argue on behalf of a client, I'll use anybody's judicial philosophy. I'll even quote Lawrence Tribe if it'll help me win the case. Certainly, I'll quote Antonin Scalia if it helps me win the case. As a criminal defense lawyer, I'm eclectic. I pick and choose what my best argument is. But as an academic and a scholar, I have a judicial philosophy about the Constitution. I think the Constitution is both a dead document and a living document. It's a dead document when it comes to things like you have to be 35 years old to be president. I argued in front of the Senate that it was a dead document when it comes to the impeachment provisions of the Constitution. It says treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And I went back to the original intent. I read all the debates in the Constitutional Convention, in the state conventions, and came to the conclusion that other high crimes and misdemeanors refer to criminal conduct akin to treason and bribery, of that degree of seriousness, of that degree of involvement in the government. And that's what I argue. The Constitution doesn't permit you to expand the concept, the criteria for impeachment, to include obstruction of Congress or abuse of power. That would be a living constitution, and I reject that. On the other hand, when you have something like the cruel and unusual punishment clause or equal protection, you need to interpret that clause. I always love to give this example. If the framers of the 14th Amendment, in which the words equal protection of the law appear, if the framers of the 14th Amendment, somebody were to get up during the debate and say, oh, by the way, does the 14th Amendment equal protection require a state to allow a black man to marry a white woman or a black kid to go to school with a white kid? Every single person in that debate would have said, are you nuts? Of course not. It doesn't apply to that. It applies, you know, to traveling on trains together, even though that was held constitutionally permissible in Plessy versus Ferguson. But nobody would have suggested that interracial marriage was part of the Equal Protection Clause. Today, nobody would suggest that it's not. Obviously, something happened. Attitudes in the country changed. It is unthinkable for a state today to tell a black person that he can't marry a white person. Unthinkable. Are there any conservatives out there, any of you, who believe in a dead constitution, who believe the Constitution means what it says when it was written? Is there any one of you who would say that it would be constitutional for a state to say, no, you just can't get married? I put that issue to Justice Scalia when he came to my class as a very young justice and debated me for 2 hours. And he said, you got me on that one. My view of textualism and originalism doesn't answer all the questions. It answers more than the other approaches do, but it doesn't answer that question. So look, there's no perfect judicial philosophy. Judicial philosophies give you an approach to how you look at a problem, but every problem requires different kinds of solutions. So I love these questions, particularly ones that give me an opportunity to be a teacher again and to express my academic views and to have you express different academic views. So I've thrown a challenge out to you now. I want you all to go to comments and answer the question. Do you think that the Equal Protection Clause today, as interpreted, means that a black person can't marry a white person or a black person can't go to school with a white person? Give me your answer and we'll continue to debate it on future Dirt shows. Thank you. See you tomorrow.